Joe Biden defending his position on gun control, saying the gentleman on the floor was exaggerating it, that he's not coming to take away their guns. But he's called the man, he said he's full of
shit.
And then he called him a horse's
ass.
Warning. The political trade features probabilities and perspectives about politicians, political parties, political outcomes, and political wagering. The political trade is rated NSFP, not safe for partisans.
The number one biggest game is when they gain number fame. It's like a race at the top because they want to be boss. They don't care who they step on as long as they get along. Politicians in my eyes.
Well, welcome back to The Political Trade, the podcast for people with a passion for politics, probability, and profits. I'm Jeff Joseph, the editorial director of Luckbox Magazine, hosting the podcast where conservatives and liberals, Republicans and Democrats, partisans and wingnuts, all come together to make money betting on politics by trading in the prediction markets at predictit.org, the stock market for politics that trades 24/7. Today's guest is well known in the Predictit world and to Luckbox magazine readers as well. You may know him as DMP. And if you don't know him, you're going to want to know him. He's none other than Derek Phillips, the man who turned $400 into $400,000 by investing in the prediction markets. Up ahead, Derek is going to reveal one of his most effective trading tactics and also share his three favorite trades in the prediction markets today. So to get the most out of this podcast, you should open up predictit.org, click on the markets tab, which is top left, follow along, and as always, leave your political ideologies at the door. And I'm joined by Mike Reddy. Mike is an editor at Luckbox Magazine, a novice prediction market trader, and the producer of The Political Trade. Mike, I know you're excited about our future guests, and we'll share that later, but how's trading been treating you lately?
Trading's been treating me fine. I know the last time that we talked, it was before the big Super Tuesday debacle. And I tell you, the trading hasn't been the only thing on my mind, though. I was looking into our numbers, and it turns out we have listeners in 38 countries spanning five continents, which is it's huge for us. I mean, I didn't think we would ever get such an international audience. A few notable things here, of course, Panama, Grenada, Barbados, they all make the list. So if we're looking to do a little tour, live show, maybe a couple candidates there.
I know you've been pitching the boondoggle for some time, so I don't think we're ready for the live show yet, but it's good to know that there's going to be a warm climate awaiting us when that time comes around. But yes, we've been our audience has been growing really quickly, and we're really happy to invite new listeners, so that's really great news. I know you've also been looking forward to having Derek on the show.
Oh, absolutely. Well, when we were closing on our last magazine issue, we were able to read Derek's story. So that's out there for anyone who wants to read that. And it truly is a really incredible story. I mean, the guy who turned $400 into $400,000, who wouldn't be inspired by that? Who wouldn't want to be like Derek?
Well, the way this came about is in the course of since we launched the Political Trade podcast, we've heard from the best traders at Predictit, those who have been the leaderboard names for a long time, and they're all lined up to be future guests. So stick with us and we'll be bringing them to you. But invariably, the name Derek Phillips comes up in almost every trader we've spoken to. And I have to admit, I was a little skeptical. That's our job as editors of Luckbox Magazine, is to be a little skeptical about the claim of turning 400 into 400,000. And Derek did a great article for us that's in the next issue of Luckbox Magazine. And remember, all you have to do to get the magazine free in digital format is to go to getluckbox.com. And you will receive the next issue of Luckbox Magazine, which has Derek's story on how he turned $400 into $400,000. But part of that process was we had to verify it because we weren't just going to print that story without actual verification.
Journalistic integrity, we uphold it.
And it was really compelling to see those numbers in front of me. So that is a verified story on his success. We saw his account records and proved that he was able to generate that kind of return. So, of course, we're looking forward to having him on the show. So Derek lives in North Carolina. He's 35 years old. He's in the next issue of Luckbox Magazine telling his story, but he's also going to be sharing some specific trading ideas and tactics today. Let's bring him on. Hello, Derek. How are you?
Hey, guys. Pretty good.
Well, we've been looking forward to having you on the show for some time, but let's start with the obvious. Last night was Super Tuesday Part 2. How did that work out for you?
Yeah, it was a late night. Wasn't terribly exciting. I think everybody kind of knew that the writing was on the wall for Bernie in a lot of these states. A lot of people anticipated that Bernie was putting all of his bets on Michigan and that that wouldn't work out. And it turns out that's pretty much the case. As we're talking, Washington is still coming in. There's still a couple hundred thousand votes out there. So that market could be anybody's. But as of now, Biden has won the main markets of Missouri, Mississippi, Michigan. Bernie's won North Dakota, and he's looking at Washington, and Biden has won Idaho. So I had a decent night.
Well, as you bring up that market, that's still outstanding. So here we are the next day after Super Tuesday Part 2. And Predicted had an interesting market, which was, will Biden win five of the primaries? They eliminated the caucus in North Dakota. And what's still outstanding, as you just mentioned, is Washington, which I have a pretty large position in right now. It's trading at 81 cents. So that's still outstanding and unresolved. And sitting at 81 cents, what do you think about that? Did you have a position there?
Yeah, I still do. And I think I probably have the same position you do, which is for Biden to come back and to win Washington. I think the votes that are still outstanding are definitely good Biden votes.
Well, from your lips to Predicted's ears, because that's an open position for me. But it also raises a question that one Mike and I were speaking of earlier today. There's often referred to, I'm sure you know, iSavage and the iSavage rule of always selling at 90. And, I bring that into question as a novice prediction market trader, Mike and I both. And we wanted to second guess that wisdom of selling at 90, because so many of the times the opportunities from 90 to 100 are really the gimmies, the layups. And I'm wondering what your take is on that.
Yeah, shout out to iSavage. He's a great trader. I really respect what he does. And I, in general, agree with the always sell at 90. But like you said, there's always opportunities where you know that a market's dead. And you know that, if you sell at 90, you're giving away 10% value. It really just kind of depends on, what you are feeling. If you feel like there's a chance that some returns are out there that could be unpredictable, yeah, you don't want to hold on. But if you think that it's a closed door, if the networks have already called it, for instance, there's no sense in, giving away money like that. I even buy at 90 sometimes if I feel like there's, a better than 90% chance that the returns are going to go the way that you're expecting.
Well, we look forward to having iSavage on the show. We've already been speaking with him, and he will be coming up in an upcoming episode. So it's nice to know that you're buying his shares at 90.
interesting tie-in there. I believe it was Scott Supak who was the first person to bring the iSavage rule to our attention. And in our most recent episode with Supak, he also said that whenever he sees things that you post, he needs to have a DMP decoder ring. So I was wondering if you wanted to answer to that, and what's Scott getting at there?
Yeah, I think a lot of the time for new traders, and even some people that have been around for a while and aren't paying attention to the board, there is a sort of gamesmanship to what's going on the comment boards. Some people refer to it as pumping. But it's a lot like in poker, for instance. You have people bluffing, you have people, saying that they have, they're showing strength in their hand, but in reality, they just have nothing. So trying to manage the personalities on the board and trying to understand what people are communicating and what people are suggesting that may or may not be true is one of the big challenges of Predicted. And I think that's one thing that I do pretty well, is I understand sort of the game theory of what we're doing here. And, I'm not always telling the truth. I'm not really lying, but I'm kind of, just trying to use my personality and to use those comments as a means of getting information from other people, seeing what people are thinking about what's going to happen, kind of understanding what is forming this market. Why are prices staying still, or why are they moving? What is everybody on the comment board kind of thinking is going to happen.
Well, we've seen a lot of value on the comments thus far on the show. For example, a hat tip, as long as we're talking about some prior guests, Jason Pipkin, as you know, was on last episode and had a couple great trades that I hope the listeners paid attention to. He basically, in the trade section, which we'll get to with you later on, he said basically if Joe had a strong performance in South Carolina, then go long all of the South, and that he was going to bring in those Southern states. And that's exactly what we saw happen. He also had an interesting trade. It was his third trade mention where he basically, and this was right before COVID started blowing up, the coronavirus, he said that he saw an opportunity to buy no's on Trump at 57 in the November market, and that the COVID response would likely bring him down. And sure enough, right now today, he's trading at 51. And that was another great trade that came out of our very, very last episode.
Those are some great trades. And I've been making them too. And they're still, Trump is still, I think, overpriced. You know, the COVID-19 is really doing some damage to the economy. And Trump's approval rating is kind of tied to that. So you see some movement in our markets. They haven't changed yet, not as much as I think they're going to. But also, I re-listened to Jip's episode with you guys just the other day, and it kind of made me nervous about making these kind of bold projections. You know, even just the comment I made earlier about Washington. So I think it's just kind of important for, you know, the listeners to recognize that in this world of politics, things change so quickly that you need to get a handle on it as soon as you can, and then make sure you know which way the wind is blowing, because it might be something completely different in 2 days.
And here's the direction it's blowing in. How about a word from our front runner?
All right, Chuck, thank you very much.
All right, it's Chris, I mean, but anyway. Chris.
You had people like Margaret Thatcher, excuse me, you had people like the former chairman and leader of the party in Germany.
The only African-American woman that ever been elected to the United States Senate. A whole range of people.
No,
my point
no, that's
is,
not true. The other
that's
one
not
is
true.
Here.
Play the radio. Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night.
What do you think? That's the man in front.
Yeah, and I love Joe Biden, unironically. I think I'm the only guy under 40 that actually really, really likes Joe Biden. And I hear these things, and they do make me laugh. And I know that this is kind of the center point of Bernie's resistance to him now, not necessarily Bernie himself, but a lot of the people who support him online are throwing these videos out and these short sound bites of him making mistakes and talking about his mental decline. And I know that Trump is going to be doing the same thing. And I don't think it really hurts. I think if anything, you know, it kind of makes him into a sympathetic figure. And, you know, if you contrast those videos with the, you know, thousands that we could put together for Trump, I don't think, you know, people are going to want to choose between somebody who is struggling with language and memory and another person who has similar issues, but also, you know, is more divisive in the figure of Trump.
It's well said, but it looks like Biden still has to take on his own party, right? I mean, so just a few moments ago before we started taping, Sanders announced that he will continue on and he's not dropping out, despite what appears to be an insurmountable delegate lead going into the DNC convention. He certainly wants to have his platform at the upcoming debate on Sunday. What do you think we're going to see there?
Yeah, I think in his speech, I just listened to it before I came on with you guys, and he's pretty well telegraphed that he's going to be throwing the whole kitchen sink at Joe in the debate. Social Security, his voting record, the war in Iraq, all of it is coming. And I think if I was on Joe's team and I was helping him do debate preparation, I would tell him that you probably just don't even really want to engage with Bernie with, you know, these issues that he's throwing out there, because everybody knows Joe's record. Everybody knows his vote record. Everybody knows the positions he's had in the past, all of it. And Bernie's kind of litigated it over and over again.
But what I think Joe needs to show is I think he needs to show command, which he's done in the last week since Super Tuesday, maybe since South Carolina, even when he gave that great speech after his victory. Try not to have any gaffes. Try not to wander off into strange directions. Try not to get mad, but just talk a lot about Trump. Talk about Obama as much as you can. And I don't think Bernie can really lay a glove on him, because Joe has the momentum and, you know, people are really looking to wrap this race up. The only way I think he can lose is if he, you know, scores a bunch of own goals and causes some problems for himself that he can't really get out of.
Like perhaps getting mad.
Joe Biden defending his position on gun control, saying the gentleman on the floor was exaggerating it, that he's not coming to take away their guns. But he's called the man, he said he's full of
shit.
And then he called him a horse's
ass.
It's noon or it's 9 o'clock out in California. I'm not going to fill in the blanks there.
We filled in the blanks.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
That's Mike on blanks, by the way.
I was actually surprised by the response to that. A lot of the people that I see online that were traditionally kind of on the Bernie side or even sitting it out were really kind of energized by seeing Joe do that. It seemed like a moment of authenticity. It seemed like, you know, not being PC, which is something that Hillary kind of struggled with 4 years ago.
With Joe still in the race, with Joe leading the race and Bernie staying in the race, and even Tulsi is continuing to exist, although certainly sitting on only two delegates. We'll talk more about her in a moment. This coming Tuesday, after the Sunday debate, we have primaries in Florida, which is the big one, 219 delegates, and then Illinois with 155, Ohio and Arizona. Do you expect there to be any opportunities for predicted traders in those markets at this point?
The only one I really am interested in is Arizona. And the things that I've seen as far as polling data and some endorsements suggests that Bernie's in for another rough night. Florida is completely off the map. I think the polls that I've seen coming out of Florida are in the neighborhood of 70-15 for Biden. It's not a place that Bernie, I think, is even going to campaign in. But Arizona, I think a lot of the premise for the remaining premise for Bernie's candidacy is that he does so well with Hispanics. And I think we're going to see if that holds up.
The market doesn't seem to be giving us a lot of room there. Currently, Biden's at 97 in Arizona.
That's right. It's a closed primary, so you're not going to get independents and right or left leaning Republicans in the primary voting for Bernie. It's just going to be, you know, card holding members of the Democratic Party, and he doesn't do as well with them. It's also an older state. So I think the electorate is just not really going to be there for him. And on top of that, I've seen some recent polling about his success with Hispanics. I think Voto Latino just did one where he was leading with Hispanics in Arizona, but leading by such a small margin that you have to think that Joe's gonna have a pretty big night and even, you know, win Arizona by a pretty comfortable margin, unless something changes at the debate.
There's still some excitement and uncertainty in the VP market.
Yeah, VP is always interesting.
By the way, I'll interrupt just to say I have really mixed emotions about even speaking about this market. In one of the early episodes, I was speaking the praises of Kamala Harris, which I had bought at 10 cents, then bought again at 8 cents, and sold it all at 11 cents. And today we're looking at 31 cents. And, you know,
I'm going to tell you why that's a mistake.
Well, tell me, as a new trader, you know, I know the tactic, the strategy that you're going to share with us. And I thought that's what I was basically doing. But meanwhile, I would have tripled my investment had I held on, if, you know, sitting at 31 cents right now. But instead, I got out at 11 cents with an average of 2 cents profit. So tell me, please, what did we do wrong there?
Sure. So the vice presidential market always just moves on news, and when news gets old, which is usually a day later or half an hour later sometimes, the candidates that spike kind of recede to the price that they were before the news broke. The news today is that Jim Clyburn of South Carolina has suggested that Biden choose a Black woman to be his VP. And I think that's actually a pretty good thing to trade on. I think that's pretty good information because Biden knows Clyburn a lot. I think if Clyburn wants something, Biden, if he can, is going to give it to him.
And that was our premise in that first and second episode with Scott Supak. In fact, specifically, Scott brought Tammy Duckworth to our attention. We titled the episode Tammy 2 Cents, and we took a position in Tammy at 3 cents, 4 cents, and got out at 5 cents. And now I see that she's, you know, she's reached up to 6, 7 cents. What do you think about Tammy Duckworth as a contender in that space?
Yeah, personally, I think she's a great choice. I don't know if it's one that Joe is going to look at, unfortunately. I think he probably is going to go with Clyburn's suggestion, or maybe he has a deal with one of the candidates that dropped out and endorsed him, which would also be Kamala Harris, but maybe Amy Klobuchar, he has a deal with her. I really don't think he wants to pick a man, but if he does, you know, maybe Pete Buttigieg, or even Deval Patrick. But Tammy Duckworth, I think she checks a lot of boxes for him.
She does. Military veteran. Yeah, veteran.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And in the Midwest, where he could use some help in places like Michigan and Wisconsin. I also think it would kind of bring out the worst of Trump and his supporters, you know, to mock and condescend somebody who gave her legs to the service of the country. I think it always kind of helps to have that sort of bait to have them making memes, you know, and calling her awful things. And she's a war veteran. I think that would help kind of energize the Democratic base and bring out, you know, people in the middle that just are tired of seeing, you know, the worst of America coming from the right.
Well, Biden certainly owes Clyburn a lot, and the premise of a Black female candidate was something that we've identified at the outset of the political trade from the early episodes. But I'll stick to my premise that he's not very fond of the exchange that he had with Kamala Harris about busing, and I think as an old timer, Joe's just going to simply hold that against her. Despite
sure.
political expediency. But she's rallying on the day. She's up 4 cents, up to 32 cents now.
She'll fade. I mean, this is how this happens. And it happened a lot worse with Trump, and not just in the VP market, but when he was choosing cabinet officials. What he liked to do is he would float a name in front of the media and then see what the response on Twitter was, see what kind of articles people were writing about in the newspapers and magazines, and then he'd change his mind and pick somebody else and float that and do it over and over again. And the markets would just, every time he did it, another candidate would go up 10 cents. Joe's not as exciting as that. He's probably not going to tease things. He's not turning it into a reality TV show, so you might see a little bit more stasis, but it really is just, you know, you buy on the rumor, sell on the news.
Well, that's an old investment adage, right? And it seems to hold true in the prediction markets as well. So final question on the VP market. Do you have longs in any of these names?
I've been buying no. I've been buying no on the top candidates. I have no on Kamala Harris that's underwater. And then I have no on Amy Klobuchar because she was the spike before. Kamala Harris, and I have no on Elizabeth Warren because when she dropped out and didn't endorse Bernie, you know, that was the news that brought her up to about 20 cents. I do have some yes on Stacey Abrams because the Clyburn news really lifted Kamala Harris, but I think it should probably lift Stacey Abrams too. I think she should probably, you know, get some recognition from the traders for the same reason that Kamala Harris is. But that's really the only positions that I have in the VP market right now.
Okay. And well, thanks for that. What we're going to move on to after a very quick break is your trading tactic. So again, we've spoke to the extraordinary returns you've had and, you know, multiplying the size of your initial $400 account to $400,000. And there's one tactic that you rely on for a bulk of that performance. And after this short break, we're going to be right back and have you share it with us. All right, we're back with Derek Phillips, our super trader of the day, the man who turned $400 into $400,000. And as always, we ask our traders to share with us a primary trading technique or tactic or strategy that they rely on for their returns. And Derek, what do you have for us?
I'll just kind of give you a tip that's basically the day-to-day of what I do on slow days and even, you know, on heavy news days. What I do is I find high volume markets. So this is really good, for instance, for the Democratic nominee market or the 2020 presidential winner market. And in those markets, all of the prices are kind of stable. You click on the order book and you see that the sell price has a lot of volume and the buy price has a lot of volume. And what I'm doing is I'm just getting in line at the buy price and, you know, waiting my turn until my orders get filled. And then when those orders get filled, I just sell them for 1 cent more. But what I'm doing is I'm just kind of capitalizing on people's impatience, because when they come to the website, they see a price, they don't want to wait in line, they just buy the highest price available. What I'm doing is I'm just taking advantage of that impatience, getting as many shares as I can, maxing a lot of times, and then, you know, just selling them for 1 cent more. And, you know, that way I'm making however many shares I have, I'm turning that into 1 cent more, so it can be, you know, for a low contract price, 5 cents, I can sell it for six, I could get 5,000 shares, and that's $50 an hour.
So you refer to that strategy as penny flipping. That's how you shared that with us when we talked about this offline a moment ago. And traders call this scalping. You know, that's what floor traders did in the commodity pits and futures pits in Chicago, New York for years. A simple idea of scalping a trade where you pick up a penny here and there. But let's walk backward a little bit and go over this. So start from the beginning. High volume markets. What would be the criteria that determines a high volume market?
It's kind of just like what's in the news right now. What's the country talking about?
And then the next step is to look at the order book. And for predicted traders, what you should know is once you look at any particular market, if you click on that market, you can open up the order book that will show the underlying yeses and nos that are bid and offered for trading. So how exactly do you work that book?
So what I'm mainly looking for, and you know, you mentioned the daily volume, but if you look at the stats, you want to look for stability in price. And if it's not stable, you want to make sure that you understand the reasons why, you know, it's declined or it's gone up in the last couple of days. So, you know, if I'm looking at the Democratic nomination market right now, I notice, you know, obviously that the price has changed over the last couple of days, because we had the big primary night last night, and it's changed again today because Bernie, people thought, was going to drop out, and then it turns out he's staying in. So you've got to figure out whether a price is stable, and you do that by looking at the offer book, like you said, to figure out where the volume is. You know, is there volume on the buy side or sell side? Does it look like it's going to go up a cent? Does it look like it's going to go down a cent? You know, look at that that price history to figure out, you know, whether it's going to revert to the price that it was a day or two ago, or whether it's on an upward trajectory, for instance.
Right. And on that point, I know you said that this is a tactic that's employed by a lot of full-time predicted traders who are maxing out on contracts, but how would you recommend a new trader who maybe doesn't have a really bulky balance could get started with penny flipping? Is there any room for that tactic for sort of lower balance traders?
Yeah, I would say there is. And in fact, it kind of helps to have a lower balance and to invest less because it's less to unload, you know. So if you are only working with 100 shares, it's a lot easier to unload that, you know, than it is to unload thousands of shares. So the best advice that I could give somebody that's just starting out is to avoid being greedy and to just kind of play around with it till you get a feel. And I have to play around with it a lot too to figure out where the demand is. A lot of times I'll put my offer out, it'll get maxed, it'll get filled immediately, I'll be maxed. And then I'm wondering if I made a mistake, so I'll just sell back at cost just to kind of get a sense of where the market is going and to get my bearings. For a novice trader, it's the same thing, you know, just kind of poke around a little bit. Don't be afraid to, you know, sell your shares back at cost, just until you understand a little bit better what you're doing and what kind of mistakes you need to avoid.
As a full-time trader, you do this how many times a day?
Hundreds. Yeah, sometimes it's a lot hotter than other times. This year, of course, is particularly profitable for that. It's not profitable, you know, in a year where there's not a national election. In those years, I have to go to other strategies.
Well, we're going to ask you about those other strategies. We're going to come right back after a quick break right now, and you're going to share your three best trades. So we'll be right back. But first,
want a little more luck in your life? Get Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability, named the best new magazine of 2019. Luckbox is a must-read for side hustlers, gamblers, entrepreneurs, and active investors. Each issue features best bets from prediction market experts, as well as timely sports wagering, stocks, options, futures, and cryptocurrency trading ideas. You can buy Luckbox on newsstands, but with this special offer, listeners of The Political Trade can receive a 10-issue digital subscription absolutely free. Just visit getluckbox.com to receive the award-winning magazine right in your inbox. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox for free today. Learn more at getluckbox.com.
All right, well, welcome back. As you know, in each episode, we ask our expert trader for actionable advice on specific markets. We're with super trader Derek Phillips, and he is going to share his three best trades for us today. Derek, what's in the first slot?
Sure. So this is kind of what we were talking about just a minute ago, is how many candidates will remain in the Democratic primary by April 1st. So my position on this is no on two candidates. You can get no on two candidates at around 50 cents, maybe a little bit more. And my reasoning for going with no on that particular bracket is I think Bernie and Tulsi are kind of tied together. That is, that if he drops, she's going to drop. If he stays in, she's going to remain. So even if one or the other of them does drop, that bracket's not going to be valueless for you. There's still going to be a lot of speculation about the other candidate dropping. And, you know, obviously, if neither of them do, you're going to win on that as well. So I think going on no with that middle bracket of having one or the other, but not both drop is probably a good bet.
Okay. Just to back up on brackets, by brackets, we refer to the underlying options in each market. So in this particular market, which is how many Democrats will be running for president on April 1st, there's basically one, two, or three are the three different options, the three brackets. The three candidates that we know of right now, obviously, are Joe Biden and then Bernie Sanders. And as you said, Tulsi Gabbard doesn't show any indication of dropping out anytime soon. In fact, to the contrary.
When it comes to actually making sure that in this presidential primary, that the only woman candidate left in the race, the only woman of color, and the first female combat veteran ever to run for the presidency has a voice, the DNC and their corporate media partners say, no thanks.
So in it to win it, or let's just say in it, is that it, that's your contention, that she'll remain in this race as long as Bernie does?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody really knows why Tulsi is still in the race. last night she came in at least fifth place in every state that was voting, and there are only two other candidates that are still in. She's showing no signs of dropping, like you said.
Well, there is some precedence. This is reminiscent of Denis Kucinich in 2004 in his presidential bid against John Kerry and John Edwards. He had no chance, but he remained in the race right up until days before the DNC convention in July. And his point was he was in it to influence foreign policy, and that really has been what the primary messaging from the Gabbard camp. You know, she's a former combat veteran, social progressive, supports Medicare for all and universal income, has a anti-interventionalist platform, kind of a libertarian bent, and against regime change wars. But she has two delegates to show for it. But as you said, she's getting a lot of earned media, and she has about $2 million as of last count in her war chest and $600,000 in debt. So I expect that she will stay in, as you said. So to wrap this up, your bet is a no on two Democrats being in the race as of April 1st, because it'll either be one or three.
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, let's move on to your second trade. What do you have for us?
So the second trade is it's a bet on whether President Trump will grant clemency to Roger Stone. And they have a couple of other markets on, I think, Paul Manafort and Flynn. But this specific one, Stone, is a really good price if you're betting against it. You can get no on him granting clemency to Roger Stone at about 38 cents. And I like bets like this because you're essentially betting on time. You're betting against time. Because as the year creeps along and this news isn't in the headlines, nobody's really talking about Roger Stone, Trump's not tweeting about it, that price is going to go down, you know, for Trump granting him clemency. So you want to be on the other side of that. I'm betting no on it. I think that it's not going to be something that Trump wants to talk about. If he is going to do it, he's not going to do it until after the election. And the price is going to be so much lower at that point that if you're on no, you're going to make, you know, quite a bit of money just being able to sell out, you know, in October or maybe even November. Or, you know, you could hold if you want to. But for these plays, I just like to bet on time doing its thing and kind of bringing gravity to the price.
All right. And of course, that is a logical assumption that Trump would not want to bring up the controversy of pardoning Stone prior to the November election. He has a 40-month sentence, as we all know, and even though there are sweeping presidential pardons that allow him to make that decision, it just doesn't seem like a politically wise one. So that's
certainly not now. I mean, it might make sense whether he wins or loses after November, but that's not what we're betting on. We're just betting that he's not going to make it anytime soon, and that people that are holding yes are going to panic and sell, and that people, you know, are going to jump into no because they think that as time goes on, it's less likely to happen.
And as you said, that's at a great price at around 35 to 38 cents right now. So let's move on to your third trade. What do you have for us?
Sure. So this is one that I actually printed in the article, it's not looking so great for me. I do want to talk about it anyway. It's Jeff Sessions winning the Alabama primary, the Alabama Senate primary. He's up against Tommy Tuberville, and he's currently trading at about 10 cents.
Well, let me give you a little setup for that as well.
And this race is really a battle for the president's approval. You have Jeff Sessions, of course, the president's former attorney general, the former senator from Alabama, now fighting to reclaim a seat that he had for 20 years. Someone who was once the most popular lawmaker in the state now clearly has been badly bruised by his relationship with the president. The president made Jeff Sessions one of his favorite punching bags. He said that appointing him to attorney general was one of the biggest mistakes he ever made because he recused himself from the Russia investigation. And now he's in a runoff with Tommy Tuberville. He's the former Auburn head football coach.
Jeff Sessions is trading at 11 cents today. So tell us your thinking.
Yeah. So the reason it's so low is because Trump this morning sent out a two-part tweet in which he fully endorsed Sessions' opponent, Tupperville. And earlier in the week, he sent out another tweet that was, you know, not exactly endorsing Tupperville, but attacking Sessions. So the reason that the market is deciding that Sessions is going to lose, that it's going to be Tupperville, is because they think that Republicans are going to just kind of get in line behind the president, vote for the guy that he wants, not for the guy that embarrassed him, and, you know, that Tupperville's going to win in a landslide. I don't think it's that easy. We saw in the 2017 special election, Trump got behind and endorsed Luther Strange, who was the establishment candidate, and the voters rejected Trump's endorsement and nominated Roy Moore. I think Jeff Sessions is worth more than 10 cents.
So it's basically a value trade. Yeah, you've got 10 or 11 cents right now, and this is...
Yeah, I don't think it can go lower.
That's right.
There's really no reason, you know, why it would... We did see one poll recently, but it was a bad poll. I think it was even a Republican internal poll. So it's not something that I put a lot of faith in that had Tupperville winning pretty big. But prior to that, the only other poll that we've seen so far had Sessions up 5 or 6 points. And that was before we got to the runoff. But I do think that there's a lot of upside. It's not going to go down. It makes a lot of sense to me to hold for a couple of weeks to just see if a different picture of that race materializes once, you know, once something new happens.
Well, we'll be watching that trade closely. As you mentioned, that's one of three longer term trades that you identified in the story that you wrote in the latest issue of Luckbox magazine. That story is available to all of our listeners. Just go to getluckbox.com and you'll receive your free subscription to Luckbox magazine, including the story about specifically how you turned your 400 into 400,000. And you include three trades. This was one of them, and two which we haven't discussed today. So we invite you to go check out that in the latest issue of Luckbox magazine. Also, for any of you who have not opened up an account at Predictit, remember, you have your first $20 for free as a result of using a promo code that we have. Just simply go to predictit.org/promo/TPT20. That's predictit.org/promo/TPT20, TPT for the political trade. And your first $20 will be matched with that promo code. So put in 20, you would now have a $40 account, and you are off and trading. So we're going to be right back with Derek for his pick of the luck box of the week. We'll be right back in a moment. Well, welcome back. We're here with Derek Phillips, and we've just covered his three recommended trades and his trading tactic. And we always wrap up each episode with the luck box of the week, where we invite our guest to share with us who they think was lucky. And a luck box is a undeserving recipient of some outlier success or outlier luck. And Derek had some thoughts to share with us. You're looking in Georgia for the luck box of the week.
I'm going to give the luck box of the week to Georgia Republicans, the Senate candidates. Georgia has two elections this year in 2020. One is a special election to fill Johnny Isaacson's seat. He's retiring. The other is a normal, six-year election for David Perdue's seat. He's the incumbent. He's kind of a weak Republican. Both of those races have gotten a lot of luck from the Democrats. In the first case, they're not able to recruit really strong Democratic candidates. Stacey Abrams has taken a pass. They're kind of just stuck with John Ossoff, who's the guy who couldn't win the race against Karen Handel in Georgia's 6th congressional district. So it looks like David Perdue's kind of holding on. And then the other race, the one to fill Isaacson's seat, It's a race between Kelly Laffer, who is the candidate that Governor Kemp had chosen.
And the wife of the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange.
Yes, very important, that detail as to why Kemp would have chosen her. And then also there's a Republican that's interested in doing it who's a Trump favorite, and that is Doug Collins. And those two have been fighting for the last couple of months about it. But the Democrats can't even really field a candidate to challenge the two of them. The best they could do is a reverend named Raphael Warnick, who just got into trouble. News just leaked that he had gotten into an argument with his wife and accidentally ran over her foot with his car. So there's a lot of speculation that he won't even be able to make it out of the primary. So where once the Democrats were looking to take a seat out of Georgia, maybe even two seats, it's not looking like they can come up with any. There are a couple of good markets you can bet on for that. There's the Senate market in Georgia. It looks like the Republicans are going to hold, so you can buy Republican there. And also, you know, since they're not going to have great candidates on the ticket for Senate, there's a good chance that Trump can end up winning Georgia. It should end up winning Georgia. It's a strong state for him.
So that's an easy formula. The car running over the foot produces opportunities in two markets. One of them, the Republicans winning that state, and also a Senate victory in Georgia as well. All right. Well, thank you for that. We'll be looking to the Georgia Republican race and take a look at your luck box of the week prediction to see how that plans out. And we have a couple of announcements before we sign off on today's show. We're really happy to say that Derek's going to come back next week because we want to get his direct feedback after the mano-on-mano debate next Sunday against Biden and Sanders. And then, of course, the Tuesday primaries coming up with Florida, Illinois, Ohio, and Arizona, because that's going to set the stage for what lies ahead. So we will we'll be holding you to task on some of the discussions we've had today. And, of course, for the next episode, if you have a specific question that you want to ask of Derek, just DM us on Twitter at Political Trader. So send us a message at Political Trader, and we will compile questions to ask Derek as he'll be joining us again in the next episode. Also next week, we're going to have a special guest joining us in the TPT studios, outspoken hedge fund manager and ousted former press secretary to the president, Anthony Scaramucci, will be joining us on The Political Trade. I've known Anthony professionally for many years, and if you know Anthony professionally, that means you also know him personally. He's that type of person. So he's a really honest, outspoken individual, does not hold back, and I think that's what we all know about him. If any of you seen him on his recent appearance on Bill Maher just last week, you understand that he doesn't hold back at all. So he earned his stripes as a true political insider, donating millions of dollars to both Republicans and Democratic candidates. He's had numerous trips on Air Force One and attended many campaign strategy meetings. We'll be asking Anthony to identify the predicted markets that he believes are the most mispriced. So again, if you have questions for the Mooch, Anthony Scaramucci, you can DM us on Twitter at Political Trader. And finally, be sure to subscribe to The Political Trade on your favorite podcast platform to make certain that you don't miss these or any upcoming episode of The Political Trade. Derek, thanks again for joining us. We look forward to having you back next week.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Terrific. And we'll regroup next week. And for now, this is Jeff Joseph.
And I'm Mike Reddy.
And join us next week on The Political Trade.